Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Professor Adrian Puren, a very good morning to you. Thanks for joining us as you always do. How are you doing? How's your weekend? Probably quite busy.
All right. Well, not well busy, but not traveling down the crazy river, as it were. Yes.
Traveling down the crazy river. I like that indeed. All right. Tell us about this Delta variant. Were we surprised that it's here? Because there seemed to be an element of shock in some of the reporting. There was almost this gasp that I was feeling coming across social media as well as mainstream media.
I think from my perspective, I think it was a matter of dread. I think once we announced the fact that both the Alpha and the Delta variants were in circulation in South Africa, and I think that was in May. And essentially that dread is based on the fact that these are both highly transmissible. In fact, the Delta variant, the one that is was originally noted in India, has a far greater level or degree of transmissibility than the Alpha variant. So I think the announcement on Saturday, I think, was really confirmation of what some of us suspected was happening with regard to, for example, Gauteng and possibly elsewhere in the country. But primarily, I think our concern is around looking at what was happening in Gauteng, that very, very steep trajectory. You know, what could explain that? And of course, as you know, there is a network of laboratories in the country that are currently monitoring what are the variants in circulation. And specifically, are there variants of concern? So from that perspective, I don't think there should have been gasps. I think the concern is, you know, once we have identified the variants, you know, how efficient or effective are our means of actually, preventing the further transmission? Because that's really, key. Yeah. Obviously, you know, if we had a vaccine rollout program that was fairly extensive, then perhaps the discussion would be different. But still, even then, if you look at what happened in the UK, you know, once the variant from that was seen in South Africa was identified, you know, they had actually lockdowns in particular specific areas to really do a trace and track and isolation in order to limit the spread of the variant that was from South Africa. And similarly, you know, the variants from India, a similar approach was adopted. And so, you know, we really need to think about how to, and are Many we effective sense. In terms of our trace and lockdowns? Yes, absolutely. So let's, are we here now?
Yeah. Let's just start in terms of identification. When somebody goes for a COVID test, does the laboratory automatically check which variant it is if it's positive?
At this time, the technology is such that unfortunately there's still a random selection of cases because we can't, given the time constraints and the cost, and time to results, there's a process of random selection of cases that come through, the different laboratories. But again, it does take a while to get to the point of actually having a sequence result. And again, perhaps we should determine what are the ways in which we could improve the efficiency in order for us to, let's say, on a weekly basis, rather than on a two-weekly or monthly basis, be reporting. Because by then, you know, the events have occurred. So I think what we're looking at now, today, has happened, you know, a week or 2 weeks ago in terms of the current circulating variants. So no, right. The result is not immediate. Compared to
and it's not automatic. Result. It's randomized.
It's a randomized selection of cases in order for us to get a good sense of what is in circulation in the country. Right. Yes.
Give us a sense of the transmissibility. Of course, we all now are experts on this. We talk about it as though we've spoken about transmissibility all of our lives. But give us a concrete understanding of the difference between the original COVID-19 virus as identified, moving then, let's say, to the Beta, which is what we knew during the second wave, and now the Delta.
Yes, so in fact, if you remember, the binding properties or related to transmissibility, well, some of these results are based on some epidemiological data in terms of so-called attack rates. That can be within households, for example, mm-hmm. or looking at laboratory data. I think the Alpha variant was, I think, about 40 to 60% higher in terms of transmissibility. And it's thought that the Delta, is 40 to 60% higher, compared to the actual Alpha variant as well. So you can see that it's a marked increase in the actual numbers that can be infected as a result. Mm. So your so-called effective R, because that's the critical component when you think about vaccines, obviously is much higher than the actual current circulating or previously dominant variant in South Africa. Mm. So that has implications, of course, in terms of our vaccination campaign, because obviously now if your R has increased, so that would obviously mean that you need to therefore vaccinate a large number of adults, for example.
On a practical level, what does that mean? In other words, we knew that, as you mentioned, at the earlier stages, if one person was ill in a household, it didn't necessarily mean everybody else was going to get it. Now we are seeing increased numbers. But what does it mean if I walk past somebody who is COVID positive with the Delta variant and perhaps we're not wearing masks? Is there a likelihood of getting it? If I sit with somebody, we're both wearing masks, but we sit for a while, are we likely to? What do we understand in terms of practical transmissibility?
Yeah, so again, I think that's a very important question. It's really around, I know we spoke about distancing, for example, and I think there were some initial papers that showed that, 2 meters would be effective in terms of if you were not wearing masks, for example, that would be a safe distance because it's not just aerosols, but droplet spread as well, or a combination thereof. So I think the question was, well, it's not just 2 meters. In the case of the Delta, you would think, well, in fact, you have to even be further away from that particular individual under those particular circumstances. But I think under circumstances where you are wearing masks, I think the risk is there, but it would be still less than if you were without masks, for example. So if you are in close contact without masks, your risks are therefore greater if Delta is in the room.
And in terms of the symptoms, in terms of how ill one becomes with the Delta versus the other variants?
Yeah, so again, it's not clear. I think there's some evidence that the symptomatology may be subtly different. So I noticed that there's mention of, for example, headache, runny nose, sore throat. But again, that combination is almost similar to what you will see in a way with the current coronavirus in circulation and or influenza virus. So again, I think it's a high index of suspicion that were you to have that combination of symptoms, you may well want to have yourself tested, for example. Mm. In terms of the pathology, are there worse outcomes? Again, I don't think it's really clear. My sense would be that similar to what we saw with the beta variant when we had that second surge is that you have such large numbers, and the consequence is that proportion of people who would become ill obviously then also increases. So it's not really marked evidence that it's more severe, but I think we will see what comes out of this. And again, obviously the important thing is around the vaccine. So again, I think there's good evidence to show that the AstraZeneca and Pfizer are effective, especially at 2 doses.
And in terms of the Johnson & Johnson?
My sense would be that if it's similar to the AstraZeneca, except that it's a single dose, then I think there's possibly the consideration of a second dose. But so I think one would have to see how that would work. But as you know, we are under constrained circumstances with regard to vaccine availability, so one would have to see how to expand one's vaccine pool in terms of the numbers,
And obviously we are, I mean, I'm putting words into your mouth, but it is what you've alluded to a few times, but we are facing a much more severe third wave given the lackluster or the speed of our vaccine rollout.
Yes, so I think the vaccine rollout really becomes really critical, and the more vaccines we can get into South Africa, the better. So again, if there's consideration around if AstraZeneca is available, then I think we should certainly incorporate that. It has gone through an initial phase of SAHPRA approval, so my sense would be that should therefore not be a limiting factor. Of course, one has to cross the T's and the I's and so forth, but if we can get those vaccines in, I think it'd be really critical, because I think it's well demonstrated in Israel, UK, United States, having expanded vaccine programs
works
in the face of a recent, does work. Yes, absolutely.
Before I let you go, Jenny asking, there is lots of data saying that masks don't actually work. The Fauci emails alluding to that as well. What are your thoughts on that?
I think masks are still essential. In fact, I noticed even in the United States, double masking was even presented as a possibility. So masks, yes, are critical.
And that's where we leave it. Professor Adrian Puren, thank you for always making yourself available to us. Professor Puren is the Acting Executive Director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD.